It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger, brought to you by Bottle Barn. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country with my co-host Dan Berger. You can read him every week, except this week in the Press Democrat. They lost his column, so it'll run next week. okay, this is exciting. We have the return of Gary Farrell Wines. GaryFarrellWinery.com. We're going to learn all about the man and the winery. I'll let Dan Berger introduce the winemaker, and we're really glad she's here.
Teresa Heredia, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Could have sworn you've been in before, but maybe not.
I don't think so.
I recognize the name because other people have mentioned on Wednesdays your name because you are a master winemaker.
A master, wow.
Or a mistress winemaker. I don't know how that works. But Barry Herbst, the wine buyer for Bottle Barn, is with us. And California Wine Country, the award-winning, internationally award-winning twice segment, radio segment, is brought to you by Bottle Barn and somebody else.
Who am I?
Kathy? No? Bottle Barn.
Bottle Barn.
Okay.
What else do you need, really?
We need a winery.
Oh, yeah. She wants a winery to help sponsor this, too. But Teresa, it's great to see you. Talk about, first off, your history, how you became a winemaker.
Yeah, so I kind of stumbled upon winemaking. I didn't grow up in a wine-growing region, although the area where I grew up, Pittsburgh, California, is now a wine-growing region, but it wasn't when I was growing up there.
Yeah, so. I didn't know it was now.
Yeah, well, now you've got a lot of Contra Costa County grapes, you know, Zinfandel, okay, Italian varietals, that sort of thing. It's pretty warm out there. So I was born and raised there, but left there and went to college at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo and studied biochemistry there, really thinking either A, I wanted to go to med school, or B, I wanted to be in biopharmaceuticals. So I did a harvest at – I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't do a harvest yet. I worked at Amgen in Thousand Oaks for a hot minute and got bored doing, you know, water sampling and microbiological stuff there.
Right.
So I applied to graduate school, got accepted to UC Davis. At that point, I decided that I wanted to be a professor. I wanted to teach chemistry because I had some awesome professors at Cal Poly. So I spent 2 years working on my doctorate when I discovered the wine program. So long story short, I was a teaching assistant along with a bunch of other graduate students from UC Davis, you know, and we all came from different disciplines. And some of them were from chemistry, some from microbiology, and some of them were from enology and viticulture. And so we started exchanging stories while grading exams, and they brought wine to the grading sessions. And when I heard that they were using GC olfactometry, so gas chromatography.
Geek alert. Okay. Geek alert.
That's getting outside of the wine geekness.
It's so cool, though. So I was using a gas chromatograph for my research as well, but I wasn't – I was doing GCMS, and so are they, but they're also using olfactometry, which is just sensory evaluation at the same time that you're doing the geeky stuff. So,
oh, yeah.
So tasting wine and smelling the individual components as you're separating them through the aromatic components as you're separating them out on the instrumentation. So pretty cool stuff. Way cooler than what I was doing, which was peptide synthesis. So
Peptides,
yeah. I was building I hadn't even started yet, but the project was to build a library of peptides to
– What are peptides?
They're like a short – it's kind of like a short protein. You know, a short chain of amino acids. A protein is a longer chain. So talk about geek stuff, right?
Yeah, well,
I imagine
why wine would be more interesting than that.
I never took biology at all in high school or college. They wouldn't let me. They knew me well enough to just say, Steve, there's no way you're going to get this. So, you
know, move on.
Yeah, take the radio class or the drumming class or something. Anyway,
drumming, cool.
I have no idea how all that works, but it's amazing. And then UC Davis, of course.
Yeah.
Just about everyone who comes through here as a winemaker spent time at UC Davis.
But it's distributed a little bit better now that you have the program at Cal Poly and
Fresno.
You have Fresno you have other schools as well.
And are there more schools in California doing that, winemaking and the chemistry of winemaking, et cetera, in California more than anywhere else in the country?
The only other main wine program that I know about, I think it's at Columbia. I think there's a wine program in New York.
Well, there are a handful of others. Columbia, Cornell University has a big program. Purdue University has a really good program.
Okay.
There's about five other major schools. Michigan State University has a huge program for winemaking.
That's my alma mater. Mm.
Michigan State.
They didn't have it then.
Well, and Dr. Stan Howell has been running that program for like 30 years. It's fabulous.
Well, I was there 50 years ago.
Right. University of Texas has a program.
Really?
At Austin, yep. There's about 30 schools in the United States that are doing winemaking, including Mississippi State, believe it or not. Wow. Of course, they're working with grape varieties that are not even grapes, but that's another story.
What the hell are they?
Well, they're pendules. They're actually pendules. It looks like fruit, but it's not. It's sort of a weird fruit anyway.
So it's
like fake wine.
And they make wine from it, but it's not exactly grape wine.
Yeah, I don't want to drink Mississippi wine.
No, you don't want that.
Would you say, Dan, that with California, with UC Davis, Fresno State, and Cal Poly, that we have a greater number of wine programs in California?
Yeah, and let's not forget Santa Rosa Junior College, because Chris Wills is the winemaker there, and he's done a really wonderful job. They even have their own brand of wines, and they're very nice wines. I don't know if you carry them, Barry, but they do have a nice
Chone Farm.
Yeah.
They have their own display.
So there's about five major programs in California alone. Of course, Fresno State and UC Davis are the two big ones. But there's also a program that's in its infancy right now at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. So there's all kinds of budding programs elsewhere. We just need to have far more funding for these programs because the industry is just growing.
Yeah. You'd think UC Santa Barbara would be big on that.
Yeah, you would think so, but I don't think
San Ynez and all. Yeah.
I don't think they have a viticulture program just yet. My granddaughter is graduating from there in about 4 weeks. So
yeah, I would. That's weird. Now Gary Farrell, very iconic, one of the most iconic names in wine country, in our wine country over all these years. Tell us about Gary and the winery.
Well, so, as a lot of people know, Gary was truly a pioneer of the Russian River Valley back in the, Gary Farrell Winery, the brand started in 1982. That first wine was a Pinot Noir from the Rocchioli Vineyard. So it goes way back. We're at, 35 years now? So when I started there, it was obviously, it had a very strong track record. But back in the 80s, people were still, beginning to develop name brands and that sort of thing and try to make Pinots with high quality, high scoring reviews. But even earlier than that, the pioneers from the Russian River Valley were coming together at places like Davis Bynum, where a lot of different winemakers, were making wines in the same facility together from what are now iconic vineyards. So you can imagine all the fun that was being had back then and all the crazy experimentation that was happening. But Gary was one of those pioneers. And he started his label in 1982, built the Gary Farrell Winery in 2000 and sold in 2004, officially retired from Gary Farrell in 2006 after the 2006 vintage.
He's now he's now selling classic cars.
Or restoring classic cars, I hear. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't realize he sold. I thought he was still there.
Oh, no.
He retired some years ago because I think Gary was just simply tired of all of the different functions that a winemaker gets into when you become world famous. And he was really quiet and introspective kind of guy. I really like Gary a lot. But, the parts of the business that are not so fun are things that he just finally got tired of and decided to move on.
Well, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. We're the same age. And he was born in Pasadena. And then he came to Sonoma State in 1970 because of his interests in political science and criminal law.
He was actually kind of a handyman at Davis Bynum Winery in 1976-77. And in 1978, Hampton Bynum, who had been making the wines, decided to give Gary an opportunity to make the wines. Gary had never made wine in his life before, sort of self-taught. And his very first wine got a silver medal at the Sonoma County Harvest Fair, the 1978 Gary Farrell, or the Davis Bynum Pinot Noir. So, and I was on the panel that judged that wine, and I was blown away by the quality of it, and that's how it all began for him.
That's a cool tidbit of information to add to our arsenal of history.
No kidding.
And that's the tour.
Exactly.
And who owns Farrell now?
So in 2011, we were purchased by a company known as called Vincraft. But now they're just a group of small – it's a small group of owners. So Bill Price is one of the main owners, and he owns Gap's Crown and Durrell. He has partial ownership in Kistler. He owns Gary Farrell. He has his own winery, Three Sticks.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's been in.
Yeah.
He's been in many times.
Bill?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
He's a –
I love Three Sticks.
Yeah, Three Sticks is a fabulous brand. And yeah. Bill's one of the most intelligent people in this industry. Also, one of the most low-key. He's a nice man with a great sense of humor.
He's great on the radio. I remember that. Yeah,
from Hawaii, very mellow.
Yeah.
Do you know, in fact, why were the Three Sticks name?
Yeah, those are the three at the end.
He's
William Price the third, and the third is Three Sticks.
Yeah, I guess all his surfer buddies back in Hawaii used to make fun of him because he had three sticks.
That's
after
right.
His name.
He was in talking about that and the whole surfer thing, and cool guy,
very cool guy.
And how long have you been at Gary Farrell?
I started there in 2012, so May 1st will be my fifth anniversary, which is crazy because I spent 10 years at Joseph Phelps, and I can't believe I'm halfway there at Gary Farrell already.
Wow.
Time flies.
And as far as Gary Farrell Wines, Bottle Barn, Barry, talk about that.
Yes, they are big sellers there. I was telling Teresa the Hallberg Pinot's probably the best seller in the house. You want some Chardonnay?
The rosé. I got rosé. We've got to talk about this rosé.
Oh, the rosé is really lovely wine.
It really is.
But yeah, we carry the entire lineup. But the best seller is the Hallberg Pinot Noir. And Olivet Lane Chardonnay is a big seller for us. And the straight Russian River Pinot, as well as the Rocchioli, all four of those are big. But we carry everything they make that they'll sell us. So.
That we'll sell, yeah.
Yeah. The wineries like to keep a few of those small odd
things. Of course.
I'm always trying to pry those out.
But of course.
We only get so many Rocchioli grapes, so it's tough to part with them.
So, Dan, your thoughts on all the years of Gary Farrell?
Well, I go way, way back with Gary. I mean, I was there when even before he released the 82, interviewed him 2 weeks before the 82 was released. And have known Gary for almost all his professional career. The nice thing about Gary is that, and especially because it leads right into what Teresa's doing, this is a winery that really respects terroir and respects acidity. And when you have both elements in the same bottle, you've got a great wine.
Thanks, Dan.
Well, and this has got to be such a cool gig for you because and your skills are top notch and they've always made great wine and you've continued that tradition.
I mean, ultimately the bottom line goal is to respect the fruit. As Dan was just saying, it's all about the terroir. We work with some of the most amazing vineyards in all of California, and if you think about it, in all the United States, we're talking about Rocchioli and Ramey and Ritchie and Hallberg, Bacigalupi, you name it. I could keep going down the list. So
all-star.
My goal, what's that?
It's the all-star list.
Yeah, it is the all-star list.
Yeah.
So when I saw the map of vineyards that we work with before I started at Gary Farrell, I just couldn't believe that I was being given this opportunity, that I was being offered such an amazing opportunity to work with the grapes and get to know these iconic individuals. And so I thought to myself, my goal is to try and improve wines that are already great. And so the only way that I could see doing that is to be more respectful of the vineyards and of the grapes. And to do that, I like to pick on the earlier end of the ripeness spectrum, when the fruit's ripe, but on the earlier end so that I can try and capture natural acidity and also be hands-off as much as possible to try and capture a sense of place in each of the bottles.
And that's exactly what Gary did.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly.
So he's restoring
classic
cars.
Automobiles,
classic cars,
yeah.
After a second retirement, right?
Right.
Is he still in Sonoma County?
As far as I know.
Yeah, he lives in Alexander Valley, and he and his wife are just wonderful, wonderful people. I adore the both of them. They're just fabulous folks.
He's a very young guy because he's my age.
He's a very young guy.
We got that.
I always say how old I am, and I'm old and cranky, but no, I'm very cool. And the wine, what did you bring, Barry?
So I brought rosé from the Loire Valley, Sancerre rosé, which is Sancerre is generally known for the white wine they make there, which is 100% Sauvignon Blanc. And these are grown on really chalky soils, really high acidity usually. And this rosé is 100% Pinot Noir and really crisp, clean, really different than what we get here because the weather program in Loire Valley is much – a longer, cooler growing season in the chalky soils.
This is a lot of
red cherry fruit.
Yeah.
Fresh red cherries. This reminds me of Michigan cherries. This is your country, Steve.
Mm. Yeah.
And what I like about the wine especially is the fact that it's pretty dry, but it's not austere. It comes across sweet on the aftertaste, but it's dry anyway.
Not sugary.
No.
It'd be good with or without food, probably. You know, it's not so dry that it would. So the reason for bringing the rosé is we just sent out a notice today on our first public tasting that's going to be for rosés from California and around the world. We're doing a tasting May 25 at the Hyatt here in Santa Rosa.
Oh, cool.
We'll be out of town.
Oh, darn. Yeah, we're hoping to get a lot of production people there.
Well, we'll be talking about this leading up closer to the date, definitely. Yeah. But,
hopefully it won't sell out by then because we sold half the tickets today already. So.
No kidding.
Yeah, Rosé's so if people hot. Are interested, they should call people, soon.
Can they go to bottlebarn.com?
Yeah, they can email us or phone the store up, and we're going to sell about 125 tickets, I think, total. We got a room that opens up into the area where they do the weddings at the Hyatt, so it'll be kind of an indoor-outdoor tasting.
Yeah.
We're open for a nice warm day, so.
Oh, it'll be fine.
Yeah, there'll be at least 40, probably 50 rosés there to taste, so.
Whoa.
Yeah, $25.
Well, Dan, tell me why I love this rosé so.
I think rosé is the best of both worlds. You get the fruit of the grape variety, but you also have, when it's made right, it's got the acidity, so it's complex enough in the fruit component to enjoy it by itself, but it also has the structure to go with great food, so you can put this with some seafood, and it will really be lovely. It'll work with both creamy dishes as well as austere dishes. It has the best of both worlds. It's the best compromise in between white and red.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've been talking about this since Ben and the old days here, especially in the last number of years. Rosés are making a huge comeback.
Big.
There's more being made. There's an ocean coming to the market right now.
And they're so good.
Yeah.
Well, you can make it from almost any red wine grape. You can choose whatever you want. I just tasted a Malbec rosé from Chile the other day that was delicious.
Really?
And I tasted a Carmenere rosé from Chile. Again, another one from the same importer. They're bringing in both a Malbec rosé and a Carmenere rosé.
Are those bigger grape, like, so Cabernet and Malbec, are those tend to be more Sangiovese bleed wines?
I would say some of them are a little darker in color and a little higher in alcohol, but these were both 13% alcohol, so they were and both dry.
And
so.
Barry, you're thinking this is an intentional whole cluster pressed.
Yeah, I think they, which is hard to do, you know, with Pinot Noir here, a lot of people are shying away from it for rosé because the grapes, as you know, are so expensive. Yeah. Loire Valley, it's a little more reasonable because everybody owns their own grapes there.
Plus, you can grow 7 or 9 tons an acre and still make a nice rosé out of it.
Oh, yeah.
In order to get a decent bottle of red wine from Pinot Noir, what's your max production of the tonnage?
What was the question?
Tonnage. What was your tons per acre on max production on high-quality Pinot Noir
on high
red?
High-quality Pinot? Well, in a big year like 2013, we had some that were, 3.5 tons to the acre. But in a normal year, it's 2.5, 3 tons on the high end.
But for rosé, you can go 7 tons and
absolutely.
Still, and there's your economic value there.
Yeah, we make a rosé for that reason.
Quickly, Barry, what's the price on
price
this?
Price on this, $16.99.
Jeez.
So. What a deal.
Killer deal.
I'm going to go buy some tonight. That is really brilliant rosé.
Tough to do in the United States.
And today we're featuring Gary Farrell Wines. Barry Herbst, the taster at Bottle Barn, is back with us. And this segment is brought to you proudly by Bottle Barn in Santa Rosa. Our guest is Teresa Heredia. She is the winemaker at Gary Farrell Winery, GaryFarrellWinery.com. What can I say? One of my favorite wineries in Sonoma County. And let's before we talk about this Chard, which is just amazing, the tasting room and the winery renovations are still ongoing, correct?
That is correct.
So
be completed sometime in June.
Oh, okay. With fingers crossed, of course, yes. Well, when you're doing anything like that, it's always fingers crossed, so explain the old tasting room and what the renovations are all about. And during the break, Dan was just saying what a gorgeous place that is, but tell us about everything.
It's okay. So the old tasting room, which wasn't actually that old, was built in 2000 when the winery was completed and had this amazing terrace view, you know, from outside, just overlooking the valley, looking at the line of trees that lined the river. You can actually see the water from there, but you can just see the whole valley, and it's stunning in all of its different forms. You know, when it's foggy, it's gorgeous. When it's sunny, it's gorgeous. So inside the tasting room, there was a tasting bar right in front of a big bayview window overlooking the whole valley, and it just looked every day like a new portrait. At any different time of the day, it looked like a new portrait. So now what they're going to do is they've taken out the bar. So it's going to be seated tasting experiences by appointment only, and the view is going to be ceiling to floor. So
nice.
Unbelievable. It's going to be absolutely stunning. And they're going to do some other things inside the tasting room as well, which I won't give up all the surprises, but it's going to be unbelievable. And then on the terrace, we'll have more comfortable lounging type of furniture.
I'm looking at the website. It says, join us in one of our intimate glamping cottages. What the hell is that?
They're actually, they're freaking awesome. Have you ever heard of a glamping experience?
No.
So they're, I think Big Sur has glamping experiences. A lot of places do now. It's just fancy tents that are set up with furniture. So when we decided to do construction, we had to figure out a solution for hosting our guests. And one of the best ideas was to put up these tents. And, you know, they're basically permanent tents.
You've been to Safari West? I've stayed in one of those those tents. Those I think that's glamping.
Not
tents.
Quite exactly. as glamping as Gary Farrell.
Really?
But
I did, they're beautiful.
I mean, I did my tasting there with you, about 4 months ago?
Oh, right.
And this was so exciting to be able to sit inside this little shed or whatever you call it.
It's a tent, yeah. But inside, you feel like you're in somebody's living room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
I stayed in a yurt once at Isis Oasis.
Same concept.
Not quite as glamorous?
No.
Yurts are in trees, though, right?
Yeah,
are
they? Exactly. Yeah. They had llamas outside.
So you have glamping cottages.
And they're fabulous, yes. I hope they don't go away. I hope we'll keep at least one or two.
How many do you have now?
We have three.
Oh, well, you got to keep them.
Right.
That's
at least
very
one
cool.
Or two.
Now, what is the, what did I see here? Hold on. Woodland tasting.
Mm. That's the glamping experience.
Oh, okay.
It's out on what we call the Woodland Terrace.
Okay, and that's happening now?
It is.
It's the tasting room that's being renovated.
As soon as the construction started, we started featuring the Woodland tastings.
Gotcha.
The tent tastings.
When Gary found this piece of property, he described it to me as basically wild. He said, this is not a traditional location for a winery, he says, but we really didn't want a tasting room. Well, they ended up with a tasting room, and they've got the most beautiful location I've ever seen.
When people show up at Gary Farrell, they don't want to leave. We recommend that people schedule it for the last tasting of the day, not too late, but just plan to be there for a while.
Okay, now you're looking at June, hopefully.
Correct.
Fingers crossed for the renovation. And tell everyone where it is, even if they want to glamp.
So the winery is located on West Side Road. The address is 10701 West Side Road. And when you go over the small Woller Bridge in Healdsburg, over by the farmhouse. So when you take River Road to Woller Road and you go over the little rickety bridge, everybody makes a right-hand turn to go to most of the wineries, but you make a left-hand turn to go to Gary Farrell. We're one of two wineries on that side of West Side Road.
Ah. Two wineries.
That's correct.
And if you get past Gary Farrell, you've gone too far because there's nothing else out there.
That is correct. If you get almost to Guerneville, you've gone way too far.
Teresa is the winemaker at Gary Farrell, and this Chardonnay is spectacular. I know I say that a lot, but I am Mr. Chardonnay, and we have so many good Chardonnays that come through here on Wednesday. But Dan, talk me through this one. This is exquisite.
This is one of the more sublime examples of Russian River Valley Chardonnay that you'll find. One of the reasons is that it was never intended to be an ostentatious wine. It was intended to be a quiet, subtle wine. But within that context is this Burgundian restraint. So you have this wonderful fruit along with just enough of the richness that you need to define the variety, and then in the aftertaste is this wonderful, subtle acidity, but it's definitely there, and it's the acidity that carries this wine all the way to this long finish. Fabulous wine.
It just hints with that richness, the butteriness, and that so many other wineries go over the top with. This just gives you a hint of it. And then the acid kicks in and really just leaves a clean, beautiful impression. Really well done.
Well
said. Did we say that this is the 2014 Olivet Lane Vineyard?
Yeah, we should be more specific.
Right.
And so this is one of our – this is the only Chardonnay that's a single vineyard selection that's available in stores like at Bottle Barn.
I must taste more.
More.
More, more.
God, that's
$38
good.
$38 at the Bottle Barn.
$38 at the Bottle Barn.
Nice.
I'd pay that in a second.
This one's almost gone.
So our Russian River selection is available, you know, in stores, but the Olivet Lane is the only single vineyard Chardonnay that's available.
Wow.
And this is picked at about 22 bricks, 22 and a half bricks maximum, because the small Wente clusters in that vineyard have tremendous concentration, great natural acidity when you pick early like that. And so I just pick when it's ready. If it tastes ready at slightly less than 22 bricks, so be it. If it tastes ready at 22.8 bricks, so be it. I capture the freshness of fruit and the acidity.
And this is an example of how the winemaker really has to spend a lot of time in the vineyard before that day of the decision day is made to when to harvest. Because that harvest date is not based upon any science. It's based upon your knowledge of that fruit.
Absolutely. And I've tasted it in many different ripeness levels, and we've dialed it in over the past few vintages. This is my third vintage at Gary Farrell, and I think we kind of hit the nail on
nailed it. Yes, in fact, I now have to take a bottle and go to La Coco's in Railroad Square tonight
and order the
Linguini Vongole.
There we go
with this. Oh God,
that really? I used to live in the condos right upstairs from La Coco's.
La Coco's.
I spent a lot of time.
I'm Italian. La Coco's is the greatest Italian restaurant in Santa Rosa, without
red and white checkered tablecloths.
Sure,
and everything.
It's got everything you need there, but and the greatest. Linguini Vongole, which is the spaghetti and clams.
Chianti bottles hanging from the ceiling?
No.
The straw ones? No? Okay.
Oh, God, this is good.
This is delicious.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
You didn't happen
it.
To bring a second bottle for my dinner tonight, did you? No.
Bottle Barn's open until
we'll work it out.
I'll head over to Bottle Barn.
I'll let Dan answer that question for you.
I'll give you the extra bottle, Steve.
Oh, you got an extra bottle.
I got the extra bottle, but you can have it.
Oh, bless
there you.
You
go. Perfect.
Bless you, my friend. Okay, what else did you bring?
Oh, so we have a 2014 Rocchioli Vineyard Pinot and 2014 Hallberg Vineyard as well.
Now, let me make one point that Americans are spoiled. They think that they can buy really high-quality Pinot Noir for $25 a bottle. You can't get wine of this quality unless it is vineyard-designated, and if it's vineyard-designated, it's going to be expensive.
Right.
The point that I'm making in a column coming up in about 3 weeks, I'm writing this article. If it's got a vineyard designate, it comes from Sonoma County, it has to be $80 or it's not worth the price.
Really?
$80 a bottle is a fair price for Sonoma County vineyard designated Pinot Noir. And if anybody's charging less than that, it's a bargain. What is your price for your Hallberg?
The Hallberg is $55.
It's a bargain. It is a bargain. Trust me.
That's what entry-level Burgundy is now.
It's exactly the point. Entry-level Burgundy is $55, and that's your price.
Gary Farrell wines are we pride ourselves on having affordable wines for people to drink from Sonoma County. And some of the vineyards, with the price of the fruit these days, it just doesn't make sense. But we want to make the best wine possible. We have access to these amazing vineyards. So when people are drinking our Russian River Selection Pinot that Barry carries there at Bottle Barn, they're paying, you know, the suggested retail on that Russian River Pinot is $45. And so they're getting a screaming deal by, you know, getting a selection that includes Rocchioli and Hallberg and all these amazing vineyards that I've mentioned before.
I don't think people realize how difficult it is to make this. And the investment that goes into this is literally, 15 years before you can ever reach the point where you're making wine of this caliber.
Really?
Yeah, it takes at least that time.
Why?
Well, number one, you've got 3 years before the grapes even will produce you a crop. And then you've got approximately 3 years from the time that the wine is made till the time is actually on the shelf. So there's 6 years in itself. Now, if you give the fact that you can't really produce a fine quality Pinot Noir from immature vines, Now you're adding 2, 3, 4 more years before the vines are even slightly mature.
Wow.
You're looking at a 15-year turnaround. Is that about right, Teresa?
That sounds about right to me.
Yeah, you've got to experiment with the different clones in different places.
Exactly. And the winemaker has to get comfortable. The first year the winemaker's in place, it's a shooting match. You just never know what you're doing. Until you're there for 3 years, 4 years, it's hard to make the proper decisions.
I don't know how you do what you do, and all winemakers, it just blows me away, and I'm just so impressed. The nose on this.
Isn't that killer?
I can't describe it at all.
Faded roses.
Oh, yeah. You said the key word. Rose petal
now,
is
see?
The quintessential Rocchioli quality.
I can't come up with this stuff, especially on the nose. I when on the palate, sometimes I hit it.
Dan's the man.
But no, Dan is the man. And holy crap, you're right. I couldn't figure out what this is, but I love it.
For sure, rose petal. And that is, so in a great vintage like 2014, you get that rose petal that just jumps out of the glass.
Yeah.
In addition to the cherry, black cherry, raspberry, all those red fruit qualities.
And the strawberry component is really fascinating, but it's not as strong as it will be. 2 years from today, that strawberry will come out of there like a
freight
train. As
they age,
really?
Yeah. You're right, strawberry comes out a little more.
I'm getting all the other berries on the palate immediately.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
But the rose... Boy, I'll tell you what, that's what you buy it for when it's young. And then after you've had one or two bottles, you go back and get more for the cellar.
Right.
Just gets more interesting.
Yeah.
Dan brought in a bottle from 1982, a cab, that we opened and tasted just before the show started, or the segment started. Explain, this is a 1982 Napa cab.
Yeah, it's from William Hill Winery.
You've laid it down since 82 or since whenever.
Yeah, and I expected more from it, but of course 82, questionable vintage, so I just decided we'd open it up tonight. It's not very good. It's,
no.
Lost it.
Tasting isn't always glamorous.
Smells a little like shoe leather. But,
yeah,
you know.
And the color is such a turnoff. It was so
looks
tired.
Looks like a shoe, actually.
Yeah.
I love that.
But, you know, you've got wines like that you've laid down.
I got hundreds of them. So, you know, so we just, why don't we do this every week? I'll just bring an old bottle and we'll
see
how it is.
I think that's great. Yeah, exactly. Because some of them are going to be amazing and some are going to be like this one.
Well, this one was really tired. The wine we're having tonight, we're having a 1997 Roero Red. In fact, we're sorry to say we won't be where you're at. We're going to be at Cabianca for dinner tonight because I'm having Vongole at Cabianca.
So. Yeah. Well, I love that. I love them too. Yes.
Tough to go wrong.
Okay, what else? Teresa, did you bring?
So, after the Rocchioli that we just tasted, now we have the Hallberg.
And what's the Hallberg? I don't remember that name. That's a Hallberg Vineyards.
Yeah. So, Hallberg is owned by Emeritus, which is located out there in Sebastopol on the winery property. So, the vineyards that we purchase grapes from are surrounding that property on the corner of 116 and Peachland.
Okay.
So,
this is another Pinot?
This is another Pinot.
Mm-hmm. So, what kind of soil is this?
It's Goldridge series, very classic Goldridge series.
Exactly. I didn't ask that question without knowing the answer.
Right.
These are both same price, Hallberg and Rocchioli at the winery?
No.
I didn't think so.
Hallberg is the $55 a bottle Pinot. And we get a bit more Hallberg than we get from Rocchioli. And some winemakers would punch their mothers in the throat to get access to Rocchioli Pinot. So that one's...
I think that's the first time that has been said on the show in 9 years, but I love it.
Awesome. Yeah. I love it. I got that from a good friend in one of our salespeople in Florida. Thanks, Chad.
Probably
anyway.
Italian.
Nope, definitely not, but maybe he got it from one of them. But anyway, the Rocchioli, it retails at $70 a bottle. And that is not available at your local stores. It's available direct from the winery, unfortunately.
Okay,
but the secret to these two wines is the vineyards. These wines are really different. A Rocchioli is one style. The Hallberg is another style. My experience with Hallberg is it's a fabulous vineyard. It doesn't show until the wine gets time in the bottle.
Correct. That is absolutely true.
Much more beefy.
Yeah, but it's going to have elegance to it in about 2 years that will blow you away.
So they're fun to taste side by side or one after the other because Rocchioli really has that quintessential middle reach, Russian River Valley, you know, characteristic of it's red fruit driven. It's very floral. It's more velvety and kind of the fruit is very sexy. The Hallberg, on the other hand, is more rustic. It's a little bit bigger. It has more tannin. It's darker in color. It has more blueberry and blackberry and just cool climate characteristics. So it makes sense because of where it's located and where Rokili is located. Soils are completely different. Climate is different.
The acid level in these two wines really calls, both wines call for salmon. Because
Definitely.
The acid needs to have an oily fish to go with it.
Mm-hmm. And damn, I don't like salmon.
I'm sorry. How about steelhead? Close enough.
Trout,
there you
sure.
go.
Sure. I'm into that.
That's a really good point that you bring up. So don't you think the Rokioli, with its lighter fruit quality and sort of lighter structure, could pair well with some lighter types of fish as
it
well?
It can, so, but for right now, the wine is so young. Mm-hmm. It's such a baby. And there's
even
little,
I can say that.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I can tell how young it is.
I think the Hallberg is probably your cellar candidate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, you put that away for 3 years, and boy, that just will explode.
This would be great with duck.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the Hallberg is perfect with duck.
That would really, the tannins would tone down and all the fat that's in duck.
The Rokioli
is still, fabulous.
You know, I would cut off my little toe to have a case of that.
Never mind.
She was ready to take you up on that, I think.
Yeah.
Who's going to do the cutting?
we have sort of a question from sort of a listener. No, he's a good guy. Sean Bressy? Yeah. Long time listener. We've only got a few minutes. Quickly, explain what you were just showing me on your phone.
Oh, yeah.
Cool app.
So there's a really cool app that you can get on your phone called When Wine Tastes Best. And I am not usually a religious advocate of biodynamic farming and biodynamic techniques and beliefs, but I do believe in the theory behind it. And this app is actually very handy for when you're tasting wines, because I do notice from day to day, especially with Pinot and Chardonnay, that some days wine tastes more restrained and other days it tastes very aromatic. It tastes very estery and you get tons of aroma. So today is a fruit day. Actually, earlier in the day, it was not. It was actually a
That's
no
the
day.
Root days you don't want, right?
Root days, the gravitational
root
forces
bad,
are stronger.
Fruit days good.
Fruit
wow.
days are good. Flower days are good.
Is this like a horoscope related
kind of
thing?
Yeah, except that when you think about it, it gets really crazy and can be very woo-woo. But the very foundation of it is based on gravitational forces and lunar cycles.
Wow.
So on a root day, gravitational forces are strong, and so the aromas and esters are being pulled down, and so they're not as available. Whereas on a flower or a fruit day, everything is really volatile and available.
Yeah. What's the app?
I mean, when wine tastes best.
When wine tastes best.
I've agreed with the assessments when it's come up.
Like, really?
One day I'm tasting with vendors.
I have
and they're
a solution to this. Just now.
Mm-hmm. Just now.
Now wine tastes good.
Wine tastes best now.
Yeah, I agree, Dan. And even though I call you the lay down guy, we've only got less than 2 minutes now. But Sean texted Mike, if it takes about 15 years to get a good Pinot, how long will you have those vines in that good of a shape?
Oh, as in how long will the vines produce great quality
good
wine?
Good Pinot, yeah.
Yeah, for a long time. I mean, I would say, you know, historically, 50 years is a good amount of time for vines to produce really great quality fruit.
John Vanderkamp, that's got to be.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be 75 years.
75
at least.
Years.
All right. Sean, we love you. Thanks, man. All right, we're running out of time here. Man, this has been another great one. Dan Berger, I just got the 1 minute. Or was that just the middle finger? I'm not sure.
A
little bit of both.
California Wine Country brought to you by Bottle Barn. Barry Herbst, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn, back with us, of course. And my co-host, Dan Berger. And Teresa from, she is the winemaker from Gary Farrell Wines, GaryFarrellWinery.com. We need to have you back, and we will.
I'd love to.
It's great to meet you, and another good show. Any thoughts on next week?
Now, next week we have an author, do we not?
We do? Who?
Oh,
Shakespeare?
Mike knows.
Ernest Hemingway? Who the hell we got? All right, we'll figure it out. And Dan, thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
God bless you. Hey, you're going to Cabianco. I'm going to La Coco's. We're having linguine vongole tonight.
There we go, both of us.
All right, we'll see you next week. And Barry, we're going to see you next week?
Yeah, I'll be on a boat ride that day, but I'm going to hope to make it back from it. So,
okay, we'll talk about that. Teresa, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, have a great night, everybody.